Я говорю вот, по-английски, по-английски.
Да, да, подожди, сначала я запишу слова, мы тебя запишем, если ты хорошо. Значит, я очень рада, что ты здесь с нами, и я должна извиниться перед тобой за то, что не так много людей собралось, как хотели, как они хотели, так можно сказать, как они планировали, как эти люди планировали, не знаю, что-то не могу говорить. Ну, в общем, короче говоря, какие-то возникли обстоятельства у наших молодых девушек, одну из них не отпускает с работы в музей, у второй там какие-то свои семейные обстоятельства, то есть, конечно, нас мог... И третий заболел гриппом, Аля, которая писала рецензию на твою книгу, она заболела, поэтому они все просят их простить, да, но это все произошло как раз в один день, так бывает. Ну, что делать? Но в любом случае, мы очень рады, что ты здесь, и что я хочу предложить тем, кто собрался. Значит, план у нас такой. Джонатан, который, как вы знаете, приехал к нам из Детройта, он преподает в Wayne State University, профессор этого университета. Джонатан собирался вот по договоренности с ним выступать по-английски. Но я подумала, что если, ну, в принципе, я вот вижу многих, для кого это не проблема, но если какие-то возникнут трудности в понимании, можно отдельные кусочки там перевести по ходу дела, если в этом будет какая-то потребность. Так что мы готовы общаться на разных языках, вот, а попробуем пока начать по-английски, да. Джонатан расскажет нам о Уорхоле сегодня, ну, наверное, в большей степени о способах работы с материалом, да, о том, как он работает. Он сейчас находится в процессе написания книги о Уорхоле, является автором очень популярного исследования под названием «Affective Mapping» – «Аффективная картина». И посвящено оно модернистской литературе. Вот, Джонатан, это просто несколько слов о тебе, мы знакомы много лет, поэтому для нас большая радость. Честь, но главное радость, что ты сегодня здесь.
Спасибо. Спасибо, Лена. Спасибо за внимание. Так что я поговорю по-английски. So, I'm right now trying to finish this book about Warhol. It's called Like Andy Warhol. And the basic problem, the basic idea of the book is to explore the relationship between liking, that is the most basic level of positive, affective attachment or openness, on the one hand, liking and likeness, which is to say similarity, liking and likeness. So like Andy Warhol, the title of the project sort of has two meanings. It means similar to Andy Warhol, but it also means it's like a command to like Andy Warhol. So part of the idea here is to think about pop art as itself evidence of Warhol's talent for liking. The pop art is about liking things. And Warhol, I'll just read a sort of a small part of an interview that Warhol gave early on in his career.
Не торопись, не торопись.
Хорошо, хорошо. Pop art as evidence of Warhol's talent for liking things. As well as an attempt to teach us how to like things. Thus, I'm thinking of liking, which I think we usually consider to be a simple, degraded form of emotional activity or attachment as itself a kind of project or praxis, right? Liking as a kind of project, something you can do. It's worth noting that from Kant to Adorno to Roland Barthes, liking specifically is singled out as like beneath aesthetic activity, right? It's what, so a text you might know of Roland Barthes, Camera Lucida, the studium is the zone of liking, right? And for Barthes, that's like, and of course we all know what liking is. That's simply to be pleased or not pleased by something. The punctum is the more complicated, sophisticated thing. The studium, liking is the simple thing. Anyway, you know, Kant and the Critique of Judgment, also liking is the obvious simple thing. Anyway, I'm making the case that liking itself now, precisely in the 20th century, has become, is not so simple. And moreover, I'm making the case that Warhol's project is to try to exert agency over liking. And indeed, to like everything. Right? So the problem I'm trying to figure out here is, okay, say you decide you want to like something. Say you decide you want to like Putin. But you really don't, right? I mean, in other words, if your task really is to like everything, that's actually a challenge. It's a serious task, right? How do you go about this task of actually liking everything, of being open to everything? Which is to say that for Warhol, I think this project of liking things actually has a significant utopian element. It's actually an attempt to create new kinds of emotional attachment and to actually transform the world into a place where those different forms of emotional attachment, strange forms, abnormal forms of emotional attachment, can find a place. Another way to maybe put the utopian quality of the project is it is only in a world in which Warhol thinks that everything is likable that he can think of himself as likable. So I think this project is actually compensatory in large part. So, I'll say more in 1 second about like what kind of a phenomenon emotionally I think liking is. But the second part of the argument is that basically how does Warhol pursue this task of liking things and of teaching us how to like things? He does it by proliferating likenesses, by producing, noticing, highlighting likenesses, by which I mean similarities, by which I mean a third term aside the same and the different. Right? The same is like to be identical, difference is somehow things don't match up, like is somewhere in between, some kind of third term. And this is a point that Jean-Luc Nancy emphasizes in the inoperative community, and the kind of one line that he says there, you know, the like is not the same. The like is not the same. So there's a lot of places we can see Warhol's emphasis on similarity. And to a certain extent, the chapters of the book are all about exploring the different ways that he promotes and proliferates similarity. I'll just mention very quickly two, just so you can get an idea of what I'm talking about. So, very early in his career, so like 1962, so Warhol does the Campbell's Soup Cans. You know, obviously it's a very famous work. And I just want to draw your attention to the technology of the production here. The Campbell's Soup Cans were done with stencils. With a stencil.
Trafaret.
Stamps, mm-hmm. Right? So, but you'll notice that, I mean, it's hard to see, and maybe, you know, if you take a look afterwards, but the image is relatively clean, right? Each Campbell's soup can looks more or less the same. How? See, the image quality is not great, but you can see that it's sort of a clean image. But come take a quick look, so you can see. And then Maryland images, you can see, are quite different. There's quite a bit of variation in the image. And this is the moment where he switches over to the silk screen, right? And the silk screen has the advantage. So the silk screen technology, right, is you have this sort of, the screen that you push it's like a photographic negative. You push the paint through the screen, and the paint sticks to the screen. It's sort of messy. So you do one image, and then you pick it up to the next one, and the paint underneath kind of sticks to the canvas. Depending how much paint you put through, the images vary. Anyway, point being that Warhol specifically liked the silkscreen technique because it produced these similarities, very evident similarities, right? So you look at these images and you say, right, all of these images are a little, these are all Maryland, but they're all as if it were differently failed reproductions of Maryland. And it's this failure that Warhol wants to emphasize in as much as it produces a field of similarities. A field of similarities, right? A sort of range of similar objects or similar images. Here's another early silk screen where you can see he's sort of playing with similarity. And Warhol himself, this is Troy Donahue, you can see there's these sort of various mistakes. Elvis, Liz, and Marilyn again. Later. So anyway, so
that's one way that he sort of produced similarity, right? And sought to kind of direct our attention to similarity. So first, the second site where you can sort of see his attention to and promotion of similarity is in his collecting. Right? So what's the principle of the collection? Say a collection of watches or a collection of teacups, right? Is that all the objects in a collection are somehow similar to each other. They're not the same, but they're somehow similar. My claim is that Warhol actually sought to place every single object of perception into a collection. So, he was an insane collector of just, he assembled these huge collections of teapots and furniture and watches and toys and cookie jars and anything you can imagine, he collected it. But he also put every single piece of paper that he came into contact with into these boxes, which he called time capsules. He assembled almost 1,000 of these boxes with all this stuff in them. He also tape recorded all of his conversations. And he called his tape recorder his wife. Right? Meet my wife, my tape recorder. Right? So he taped all his conversations. So there are thousands of hours of taped conversations in the archives. He also took tens of thousands of photographs. He always had a camera and was constantly photographing everything that he saw. He also collected photographs. He also collected art. Right. So this idea that everything that he comes to contact with, he tries to relate to it on the level of perception and emotion as belonging already to a field of similarities. Right? In other words, I don't think Warhol is actually interested in assembling the collections. the collections are merely a device for attuning him to similarity on a daily basis, right? In other words, by relating to, and Walter Benjamin has a very nice quote about this in the Arcades Project, for the collector, everything is striking. Everything is emotionally striking because you're placing, you're thinking about everything in relation to a collection of similar, in relation to a collection of similar, similar objects. So, okay, I mean, there's a bunch of other, I also talk about boredom, there's a chapter on boredom in the book as a way to stimulate attention to similarity, the imitation of the machine, the principle of repetition in production. But the other thing I should say, it was two more things I'll say, then we can stop and you can ask questions and I'll explain what's... doesn't make sense. How am I thinking of how Warhol relates to this, or what is liking? Is it an emotion? What kind of a thing is it? I'm basically conceiving of liking as the most basic level of emotional openness to something that actually that precedes emotions, but which includes as a kind of as part of its logic interest, that is a readiness to pay attention to something, attraction. A readiness to or desire to be closer to something, and affirmation, the sort of acknowledgement of the presence, the desire that this thing actually exists, right? Those things are sort of contained, I think, for Warhol within liking. And I'm thinking about liking as the precondition for any other kind of emotional reaction. From intense desire to disgust, right? Positive or negative emotions, right? In order to have a sort of a range of emotional responses to something, I think you have to be able first to do what Warhol calls like it, right? So that's first. The way that I'm thinking of how Warhol pursues this project of liking things is the following. So, right, you can't just decide to like something, right? You can't, I'm going to like this, right? You can't, it's not a decision you can sort of consciously make. So the way that you exert agency, or the way that you kind of exert power in relation to the capacity to like is mediated. And it's mediated, I think, through, and those of you who heard me recently, be familiar with this, through what Heidegger calls Stimmung, mood, through mood, right? So, in other words, for Warhol, I see the task of pop, of a sort of pop way of seeing the world, as putting one in the right mood for being emotionally open to things. And the way that he does that is to attune us to similarities. So, one final thing. Why is this, so like, why, how does this work, or why is this important, or like, why now, or what does this have to do with modernity, or, this is a more, you know, this is a more complicated question, but basically I'd say something like the following. I'm presuming more or less Walter Benjamin's analysis of modernity in relation to the mimetic faculty, which he explores in a couple of short pieces of writing on the mimetic faculty, but also in his essays on Baudelaire and on art in the age of its technological reproducibility, the famous essay. Basically, I think Benjamin is trying to say something like, look, modernity has not been kind to the mimetic faculty in as much as, and this is the analysis that he undertakes in the Baudelaire essay, on which Susan Buck Morris has an outstanding essay called Aesthetics and Anesthetics. I don't know if there's a Ruskin Peter Boyle. But basically, Bateman's analysis, which you might be familiar with, is like, in reaction to the constant shocks of everyday life, we withdraw our mimetic faculty. Which is to say, let's say if you were to be emotionally open to all of the suffering that you saw every day on the nightly news, you would immediately have a nervous breakdown. It would be impossible, right? Never mind to be emotionally open simply to all the faces that you see on a daily basis, right? So what do? We sort of have to close ourselves off from this mimetic openness to the world. We're no longer in the habit of thinking of, not thinking of feeling our similarity to other persons and also to objects, right? Bateman is very impressed with the way that children, for example, don't just imitate other people, but imitate chairs or tables or windmills or bridges. Right there, children's capacity and desire for imitation is sort of extends basically to everything. They're prepared to see everything as similar to them in some way, to try to be similar in one way or another. So essentially, I think what Warhol's trying to do is to stimulate our mimetic faculties, a task that Benjamin also wanted to do, and Warhol was doing it in a similar way that Benjamin argued for, which is to say, by way of the commodity and by way of mechanical reproduction. Right? Warhol is trying to direct our attention to the ways in which the commodity, mass culture, already depends upon a likeness or a similarity which we are no longer, which we don't attend to. Which we don't pay attention to. So let me see. So Benjamin, the mimetic faculty. Of course, I mean, the other thing is at the precise moment that Warhol talked about pop art as liking things, 1963, the Cold War, right in the middle of the Cold War. Right, the Cuban Missile Crisis has just recently, right, nuclear war is sort of, and so the discourse of difference between the U.S. and the Soviet Union is sort of at peak, right? It's also the middle of the Civil Rights Movement, tremendous amount of violence against black people in the South, just police beating, right? So the idea of racial difference is sort of at a peak, and so Warhol, in calling for an attention to similarity, I think it's also very attuned not just to these more general issues, but also to the very specific historical situation in which he finds himself. And there's this interview with Warhol where he talks about this that's interesting that I could read if we want to, but it might be harder to follow. So I'm sure I've forgotten things. This is a very rough outline of a big book project. I mean, there's also a way in which liking and Warhol's emphasis on liking is also a way to displace or to put aside the psychoanalytic emphasis on desire. Right, in as much as desire is based on lack or absence, it's quite distinct from liking, which for Warhol is based on accumulation. The more, the better, right? In other words, if for Warhol the precondition of liking things is that he can conceive of it as part of a collection, the more of the things that there are, his capacity for liking things, liking that thing, increases, right? So he also had, I mean, he had a collection of thousands of drawings of male genitalia, for example. And then also photographs, Polaroids. He would ask men, when they came in, he would just ask them to pull down their pants so he could take a photo, right? It's like a, you know,
Or to draw it, right? He said he had a cock book. You know, and which exists, which is, I mean, these sort of in the Warhol Museum, there's these sort of archives of, you know, all these drawings. He also did feet, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of drawings of feet. Anyway, point being, he actually, I mean, I think he also related to what we would think of as sexual desire in these terms, as a kind of liking in which sort of cumulation and collecting is the key, is the principle. The only other example that I would give, and then you know, you can ask questions to clarify, and you know, I can talk more about things. Is he would, okay? So we get the silk screens, collecting. He also just engaged regularly in these sort of strange kind of identity games. So, for example, Warhol would get invited to give a talk at a university. He decided to send somebody else, a guy who was younger, more attractive, better looking, and to pretend as if he was Warhol. And this guy went, Alan Midget, he gave like 10 talks as Warhol. He just said, I'm Warhol, and people thought actually that this was Warhol. Later, someone was looking at a photograph at some small college in Oregon, was looking at a photograph and was like, wait a minute, this was not Warhol, and called Warhol on the phone. Anyway, Warhol's a very funny thing about this, that you know, he didn't understand, like, why, what's the big deal? But actually, the guy was very upset. He had to give back the money that he got paid for giving the talk. But it's an interesting moment for thinking about the ways that we hold on to the idea of identity, right? And how even something, I mean, you know, what if tomorrow Aliyev came in and said, I am Liana Petrovskaya, and today I'll be giving a talk, da-da-da-da-da. What are you gonna say, right? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna say? You're not, so it's this moment, you know, Warhol was sort of, I think, is, you know, sort of everywhere that he can is trying to disrupt notions of identity, of being the identical, and trying to kind of shake us out of our habits of thinking in terms of identity with these kind of identity games. So I can just say very quickly that so the book has like four chapters, the introduction, which is not yet written, and which you know, I have a lot of things to think about, and I have my own questions for you, maybe, about affect and liking and Facebook. But anyway, four chapters. The first chapter is about collecting. I also collect up Warhol's practice of collecting with Warhol's imagination of collectivity, and I argue that he conceives of the collectivity in the factory, which was his studio, as one based on similarity. So his screen tests, these kino probi, that were like 3 minutes long, so maybe 560 of them. I make the case that that's essentially a model of Warhol's sort of vision of collectivity, a collectivity based not on an identity, but also not on overcoming difference somehow, but on this principle of similarity. So that's the first chapter on collecting. The second chapter is on the imitation of the machine, and I compare Warhol to Saul Levitt, the sort of conceptual artist. The third chapter is the chapter on boredom. I compare Warhol to Donald Judd, a minimal artist, and talk there mainly about Warhol's early minimal films, right? The 8-hour film of the Empire State Building, 5.5 hours of his boyfriend at the time sleeping, these minimal films. And he talks about these films. He compares watching these films to looking out the window. And just sort of staring out the window. Anyway, and that's the window is obviously an interesting trope, an old artistic metaphor for thinking about what art is, and we're all sort of... Anyway, so That's what I'm doing there. And then in the final chapter, I'm talking about Warhol's representation of skin. And in particular, as a way to think about Warhol's representation of racial difference. His attention to technologies of the reproduction of skin. And I'll just show you one thing. I think that Warhol was interested in the way that the camera, the photograph, is itself a racializing, itself creates race as a visual phenomenon. Because the camera, at its normal default settings, captures light-colored skin, white skin, but black skin, darker-colored skin, is just invisible, essentially, right? So there's this one image. Yeah, it's here. So this is it's called Race Riot, and I'll just draw your attention. So, I mean, you can just see here, I mean, of course it has to do with the shadows and stuff, but the faces of the police are clear, you can sort of see them, but the face of the black man at the center of the, is a sort of pure ink, right? Pure black ink. And so, I was thinking about that in relation to the Marilyn, where he does a similar thing, right, with this Marilyn here, just through a printing effect, he turns her face black as well, right? So he's sort of, illustrating this, he's doing two things. He's illustrating the extent to which skin is itself a technologically produced visual effect, right? Ink on paper, the opposition between black and white, on the one hand, and he's also sort of translating what was a sort of opposition between black and white in the Race Riot photos to a field of similarities where the same person, in fact, can be both black and white through the effect of reproduction. Anyway, so that's the obviously, it's a more complicated argument than that, but that's the basic sort of formal thing in his work that I'm drawing attention to there. So anyway, that's it. I'm happy to. I'm sure that a lot of that was not very clear, and I apologize for being scattered. But thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to receive questions, contestations, doubts, or simply clarifications.
Вопросы. Ну, да, может быть, уточню. Вот Антон там, кстати, подает сигнал. Я хочу сказать. Конечно. Ну, вообще можно говорить сейчас, как вам нравится. По-русски.
Ну, товарищ у Варховского, Манже Варховый, был товарищ же, Макултор, у которого с отображением цвета кожи все было нормально в фотографии. Он просто умел снимать, в отличие от Ворхова.
Мапплтор.
У него с фотографией, с изображением,
да,
фотографии,
да, да, да,
к,
да,
человеческой коже,
да,
все было в порядке, потому что он умел снимать.
Конечно.
Он хороший фотограф.
Конечно. Это...
У него там есть эта тема, про которую,
да,
вы говорите,
да, да,
черное, белое, белое, черное там.
Нет, ну это... Как снимать одновременно. Конечно, это возможно снимать, но надо что-то особенно делать. И это просто, у нас это просто известно. То есть, когда есть, как называется, like school picture. Если это фотограф, как бы, делает вот этот exposure, the film stock. Дело в том, что это очень трудно. Дело, что и белый, и черный кожи, как бы, ясно. Это проблема, то есть,
очень много режиссеров об этом говорят. То есть это... Я сам здесь ничего особенного не заметил. Это просто много об этом говорят. Это просто проблема. И Polaroid, дело в том, что выставка Polaroid, как бы 70-х годов, это была специфичная для них задача попробовать найти и делать фильм, который бы хорошо снимал темной кожи. Так что это просто. Нет, я просто не вижу.
Они надели специальные карточки даже?
Не знаю. Ты технику просто я сам не
занимаюсь.
Понятно.
Я не фотограф сам, так что.
Джонатан, я хотела уточнить,
ты сказал,
вопрос уточняющего порядка насчет желания, соотношения желания, desire и liking.
Да.
Вот, и, кстати говоря, может быть, ты вернешься, вот ты высказал достаточно нетривиальную мысль о том, что liking, я даже не знаю, как по-русски сказать, расположение, что ли? Как по-русски сказать?
Вот это тоже большой вопрос.
Ну, у тебя же есть еще игра слов, поэтому мы, конечно, ее не сумеем сохранить, но какое-то расположение, интерес.
Вот то, что Барт... Да,
то, что Барт называет вежливый интерес, учтивый интерес, ну, вот как он объясняет. Нет, в том-то и дело, это такой более мягкий модус реагирования. Да, такое настроение.
Приятие.
Расположение, да, скорее всего.
Расположение.
Я просто говорю расположение. Расположение. Вот ты говоришь...
История слова здесь интересная.
Да, я говорю о том, что ты говоришь, что это вот базовый уровень эмоциональной открытости. Я тебя цитирую. Basic level of emotional openness. Ну,
or affective.
Ну нет, не важно. Affective openness, пожалуйста. Ну, базовый уровень. И мне вообще представляется, что это какая-то, ну, грубо говоря, стертая форма аффективности. Или нейтральная, или какая-то нулевая, что ли, степень аффективности самой. О чем ты говоришь, ссылаясь, кстати говоря, на таких авторов, как Барт, которые действительно очень... ну, как бы это сказать мягче, подозрительно относятся вот к такому способу рассматривания, допустим, изображения в его случае. Вот. Это как бы какая-то вот, что ли, нулевая степень аффекта, нейтральный уровень аффекта. Что это такое?
Zero.
Вот как ты это? Zero degree.
There's already a principle of attraction there in liking. Потому что, конечно, наш обычный как бы вид, например,
что это?
It's defensive.
Защита.
So for Warhol, it's an attempt to put that aside, right? Although I think that my way of thinking about this is more attuned to. Right? So where our ontology, our being is already essentially plural. Right? We are already similar to each other in order to conceive of our being at all, in order to be, we have to be similar, be with others, right? Grubo kriya. Part of what happens with modernity, again to speak very grubo, is that's negated, right? Of course, Paulo Virno talks about this as well, right? That sort of withness can always be negated, is regularly negated, and Warhol is not. This is where what he's doing is different from sympathy. Right? The idea of sympathy is you have two independent beings, and one has to you have to overcome their difference to somehow feel with. It's not sachusse, right? It's not sympathy in that, which is a big theme in 19th century American literature. but it is an attempt to kind of reopen a basic level of withness, which is essential for then allowing oneself to be affected both positively and negatively by the world.
У меня вопрос в этой связи. Как ты думаешь, вот ты сейчас сослался на Нанси, как ты думаешь, можно ли представить себе такую ситуацию, когда ты вместе, with, being with, но при этом, being like, в смысле, с себе подобными, но при этом ты не испытываешь к себе подобным вот этого расположения. То есть, without liking. Нет, но мне кажется, что посылка Джонатана связана с тем, что вот это бытие с предполагает еще и какое-то настроение базовое, вот то, что называешь Тимун. Нет, у Нанси этого нет. Но вот я сейчас пытаюсь какую-то логику Джонатана для себя прояснить, что это событие, как переводил Рыклин, то есть бытие вместе. Вот мне кажется, ну, по крайней мере, в версии Уорхола предполагает и какое-то расположение. Схожесть с другим или подобие другому, как расположение к нему же. Вот так, если по-русски.
Я могу.
So the question is, how can you feel... Is it possible to feel similarity without liking?
No, can you be with without liking?
Yeah, right.
Can you be like without liking? Мотив, связанный со Штимом, с настроением, что нельзя быть вместе, не имея какого-то... Вообще нельзя быть без настроения даже. Так ты говорил. Правильно я говорю? И это позволяет связать или, по крайней мере, в какой-то степени преодолеть разрыв.
So let me just try to... And let me just try to restate in English what I think you said to make sure that I understand.
Yeah, okay, do that.
So... That essentially, and maybe extend it a little bit, that essentially, before, say, mass production, what Warhol calls liking is actually not, it's not that it's not possible, it's just that it doesn't exist. Or it's, so that liking is in essence an attempt on Warhol's part to find a way to cope with these new conditions of affectivity, right? In a way that essentially, I mean, my understanding of what we're all doing here is obviously owes a great deal to Benjamin, right? Or at least to my understanding of Benjamin, who in the Art of the Age of Mechanical Reproduction is making a similar, I mean, throughout his work, I think he's similarly, right, so modernity involves the disappearance of this sort of emotionally rich experience, erfahrung, and so he's trying to find a way to recreate that. Where might it reside? We have to reimagine what we think experience is in order to do that, and so he's trying to do that. He's trying to find a way for mass production where that can be possible. So Warhol is essentially trying to do, liking is in essence a new kind of affectivity as a way to be open to this new world, which puts demands on the sensorium that are unprecedented, different, new, and so bulimia.
Нет, ну я думаю, да. И даже, видимо, вот это liking в интерпретации Уорхола – это попытка противопоставить нечто анестезирующему влиянию современных технических средств, ну, тому, той анестезии чувственности, которая происходит благодаря развитию темы.
То, что это из Сьюзан.
Да, то, что Сьюзан называет.
Yes, so I mean, I should say too that this runs completely counter to our usual understandings of Warhol.
Ну, вот это важный момент, да.
Usually, we think of Warhol's principle of repetition as a kind of traumatic after effect, right? As repeating the anesthetizing effect of mass culture, right? Hal Foster makes this argument. Фред Джеймсон kind of supposes this argument.
Вот, может быть, это нужно сказать. Значит, вот то видение Уорхола, которое предлагает Джонатан, решительно отличается от преобладающего. А именно, весь повтор у Уорхола интерпретируется как повторение и воспроизведение некоторого травматического эффекта. Так Фостер, вот известный теоретик современного искусства, его интерпретирует. А Джонатан говорит другое.
Наоборот.
То есть ровно наоборот.
Это попытка, как бы, ну, так, ты это сказал, это как попытка, как бы, put aside this anesthetizing effect.
Ну да, это как раз способ преодолеть или, по крайней мере, как-то, насколько возможно, избавиться от этого анестезирующего эффекта.
I mean, you know, so most people think of a painting like this. I mean, there are others, right? There's the paintings, which I don't have here, but the paintings of the car crashes.
Да, вот у него есть серия.
Right? Like, bodies are like, you know, dead bodies. They're like distorted. He repeats. Yes.
Tuna fish
disasters. The electric chair, of course. These sort of famous negative images, right? Which in the sort of art historical canon are seen as the great Warhol works, the negative ones, right? Marilyn Monroe, Campbell soup cans, those are sort of commodities. That's not very serious. The real work is the work that sort of takes the negative effects of capitalism or mass production, right? And it's so, and most people view these images as a transforming of something very negative into decoration, you know, a further anesthetization.
Ну да, да, дальнейшее анестезирование.
So I'm making a kind of contrary argument that actually an image like this, and it's hard on a sort of screen like this, but these images are about 8 feet tall, like 3 meters. They're huge.
Поясни, что вы имеете в виду, когда говорите об анестезии травмы, ссылайтесь на Сьюзан.
А, Джон, давай. Вот как раз возник вопрос, поскольку ты упомянул эссе Сьюзан, то Лена просит, если можно, ну, очень коротко воспроизвести ее аргумент. Вот в ее эссе, посвященном Бенемину, где она говорит об анестезии чувственности. Если это возможно. Или как ты это помнишь? Насколько ты
помнишь? It's basically this argument about shocks. Right, so aesthetics and anesthetics. Susan, I think, is basically summarizing and extending Benjamin's argument, where Benjamin is saying, look, modernity is essentially a series of shocks to the system. Mm-hmm. In response to that, we close ourselves off. How does mass culture respond to that? By trying to break through. So advertisements become brighter and louder, and the nightly news, it's the super shocking, right? So they're constantly trying to break through, in response to which we close ourselves off more and more. And even, you know, so, I mean, Benjamin is interested in how Baudelaire becomes what he calls a traumatophile.
Травматофил.
He seeks traumatic experiences in order to break through the как бы защитные.
Да, он собирает, он как бы нарывается на этот травматический опыт, чтобы прорвать вот этот щит. Щит, ведь они же цитируют и Фрейда все.
And she talks about you know, fascist aesthetics in these terms. So I'm just saying that I think this is also, so that's, I mean, very quickly, that's the line of thought that Susan is, and it's a sort of, I mean, Susan sort of, you know, shows it to be like a sort of downward spiral, right? The more our defenses are attacked, the more we shield ourselves, the more aesthetics tries to break through, the more we shield ourselves, and Susan sort of says, okay, look, this is the context in which we have to understand 20th century aesthetics. 20th century art is in some ways about this phenomenon.
То есть для Вохола это тоже попытка выставить защитный щит?
Наоборот.
Да, да.
Это попытка
наоборот, открыть и полюбить это.
Да, расслаблят как бы защиты, как бы...
Снять.
Или как бы, скорее всего, двигаться как бы в другом настроении. Mm-hmm. Просто как бы attune oneself to a different set of things.
Настроить себя на другой круг вещей.
So that these negative images, it's not that you then perceive them to be shocking, mm-hmm. right? But you're able to have another to have feelings about them.
То есть они воспринимаются как шокирующие, но по крайней мере они у вас вызывают какие-то чувства. Иначе бы вы просто ничего не испытывали, глядя на эти ужасные.
Какая-то диалектика, шок, защита, шок. И Уорхол как бы попробовал снять вот этот дилет.
Нарушить этот механизм, да, наверное.
The specificity of each one, the singularity of each one emerges in a way that it did not before. Right? Whereas in a world of identity and difference, singularity, which is to say specificity, is lost. Right? This is also the world of, capital, right, or something, right? I mean, the sort of universal equivalence, right? I mean, the very principle of money, right, is to take sort of two distinct or different things and through money to make them equal to each other, right? So we're constantly moving between difference and equality, right? And when we're used to moving constantly between difference and equality, this sort of finer kind of other sense of similarity is lost, falls by the wayside, right? These sort of, right, so 100 images of Marilyn Monroe, right? We're used to thinking, that's Marilyn Monroe. But then you see 100 images and it's sort of, okay, look, there are these sort of singular fine differences. I mean, I think that an image like that, the Marilyn image, is actually about the experience of consumption itself. Right, so we're all imitating our own Marilyn. We're all failing to be Marilyn or James Dean or whomever in our own particular way. And our singularity emerges not from some inner, core of individuality or something.
Dusha.
Yeah, it's not. This is not Ruska Dusha. It's our singularity emerges in the ways that we fail to be the same as. Indeed, fail even to be the same as ourselves. Right, so the Kino Broby, 4 minutes, one face, and Warhol says, when people come to sit down, he says, okay, just sit there, try not to move. Try not even to blink your eyes, right, for 3 minutes. And people sort of come and they try to kind of strike a pose, right? Even within, it turns out it's impossible. Within 20, 30 seconds, the face kind of starts to, there's little twitches or little, tears start to form. Right? The face dissolves. You can't even be the same as yourself for like 30 seconds. Right? In other words, I feel that the Kino Broby are kind of dramatizations of the non-existence of identity, that actually our own subjectivities are accumulations of failed imitations of some idea that we have of ourselves. Yes, we have понятно или
нет? Да, да. Тогда следующий вопрос.
Я прошу прощения, фактически вводит такой механизм, который является то, что он называет третьим термином, является альтернативным по отношению к игре тождества и различия, альтернативным. То есть вот Антон спросил, почему вообще какое-то различие должно возникать в этих портретах бесконечных, той же Монро и так далее. Почему они все не идентичны друг другу? И Джонатан говорит, что как раз в случае подобия, когда мы все похожи, в случае подобия и может проявиться уникальность. То есть там, где мы изначально все похожи, и когда мы начинаем рассматривать эти похожие, допустим, фотографии, мы можем увидеть свою уникальность. Или нечто уникальное. Нет? Вопрос, если ты похож, на что ты похож, правильно?
Когда уже на такое похож, ты не узнаешь, на что.
Просто поскольку Леорку это механизм умножения этих лайкнесс, соответственно, должен быть какой-то прототип.
What's the original? Is there a
original? Yeah,
couldn't walk this neck. No, there's no original. Friedman has a nice thing about this. He says, the way to stimulate the mimetic faculty is to attend to the mechanisms for the production of similarity. In other words, it's already a it's especially now, but it's already a fact of daily life that there are sort of these machines producing similarity. Right? In other words, Warhol's not you know, whatever, there are 100 million of these pens, right? The principle of mass production. But you might also say, you can see it in nature as well, right? I mean, everything, Platonov somewhere says this, nothing exists, nothing comes into existence without being similar to something else. Platonov. Jim Gurian, that's good. You know, he's talking about plants and stars, right? This is also close to Nancy, right? Which is to say, a basic principle of being itself is the similarity of things, right? So it's similarity is not something to be achieved. It's something that already exists, and it needs only to be apprehended. If that's...
Yeah.
And Warhol's sort of trying to say, look, the movies, consumer society, all of these things are machines for the production of similarity that actually should or could greatly increase our capacity for being open, emotionally open to the world, in principle. But they have not yet, right? So it's like he's trying to draw our attention to these things that are around us, that are where similarities are already proliferating.
Does it mean that all the practice of copy-pasting and retweeting and all the Facebook stuff make the same effect of producing similarities?
The question of Facebook is an interesting question here. To which I don't have an answer. But, you know, right, like, the basic principle of Facebook is liking, right? To sort of push this button to like something. I mean, the question is whether that's, in fact, actually a negation of liking in Warhol's sense. Actually, that button is there precisely as a symptom of our incapacity to like. Right, and sort of precisely that button is there, and it's attractive precisely because we all wish that we could be closer. I mean, I think we all know this to be true. Like, there's this moment that, I don't know if people do Facebook or whatever, but there's this moment initially where you think, Facebook, you're going to connect with all these old friends, and you'll see all these people, and you can post pictures, and it's going to be a kind of a new sense of community or something. But it actually doesn't work out that way, right? It's yet another alienating experience where you're worried about what this person thinks of you, and you put this post, and how many people liked my post, and so, I mean, it's sort of... Anyway, so I'm inclined to see the logic of Facebook is actually not one of the emotional openness, but it's actually symptomatic of what we're all
seeing. But there is no emotion out there.
Maybe, but I don't know. I'm curious what other people think about this. I mean, what I mean to say is that, like, look, the Facebook is so popular precisely because we feel this lack of emotional openness, and it promises, it's the commodity logic, right? It promises an emotional connection, which it then fails to deliver. But of course, if it delivered the emotional connection that it promises, then we would no longer need Facebook. So it because that's what keeps us going to the next picture, to like the next picture, and going on to that, right? And so it's that, it seems to me, I don't know, maybe.
Но в то же время, когда ты просишь кого-нибудь стать твоим другом на Фейсбуке, можно сказать, что ты находишься в этом состоянии likeness, of open, открыт всем вот этим эмоциям, emotional openness, которые придут потом со всеми его там, постами, фотографиями и так далее, и ты не обязан их любить. То есть, если вот вы говорили о том, что это как базисный элемент.
Ну, Лен, не всегда.
Maybe, maybe.
Но я должна сказать, что бывает, приходит, нет, ну нет, как раз начинается практика жизни. Потому что часто приходит какой-то запрос, и ты думаешь, ну да, ты знаешь этого человека, и тебе неудобно отказать. То есть там начинаются какие-то совсем другие механизмы. Вот Джонатан как раз, мне кажется, настаивает на том, что это большая сеть, которая становится формой товарного обмена, ну и так далее, и так далее. Не столько обмена, там, я не знаю, какими-то нашими эмоциями.
On the other hand, the function of Facebook in actual, in political protest is interesting. Right, and sort of creating collectives, right? I mean, I think there's sort of particular moments when the function of Facebook shifts, right? It's like the revolution in Egypt, right? It was this moment not only Facebook was actually the mechanism, the medium through which people could come together and learn news about what was happening, and
well, actually, your understanding of life is the basic sort of basic level. Openness is exactly what it's like, and that's why I have the question.
Yeah.
Because life is not a sort of emotional involvement in your understanding.
Yeah.
It's just sort of first impulse to be towards something, and in this sense, the like in Facebook is this. Gesture of, you know, opening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe. But it's, you know, I don't know, it's complicated. The Facebook case is complicated. As a medium logic.
It's actually quite difficult to sort of accept, I'm sorry, your idea that life, to life, it doesn't involve any emotional.
I'm not saying that it doesn't involve any emotional.
Well, yeah,
but
it's more for me. It's more charged with, you know, sort of interest or.
Yeah, these are three things. Three things: interest, attraction, and affirmation. But those are.
It's not basic anymore, you know.
But I think those are the basic conditions for being affected by something. In a way that's not like breaking through your defense. Of course, you could be not paying attention, and if someone hits you in the side of the head, of course you're affected by that. You don't need to be, you know, you don't need to like it or something, right? To be affected in that way. But I think for Warhol, I mean, I think that I mean there's this famous psychological test in which people are shown two images and. Infants also sort of show two images, and these tests sort of show that the image that you've seen already, you look at more. You always, infants at 3 months, already look at the image that they've seen, even if they've only seen it once before, they look more at the image that they've already seen. And so, I mean, it's that, in other words, they are attracted to it, in a sense that they want to move closer to it, they're paying attention to it, and they're sort of affirming it, right? There's a sort of base level affirmation of this existence. That's kind of what I'm talking about with liking, the sort of basic level of affective, not just openness, I guess, but I would say engagement. Right, but this basic level of, but I mean, this is part of what I'm saying. This basic level of emotional engagement is not so. It may be basic in the sense of fundamental, but it's not simple.
Okay.
No. Or right, I mean, this is why I mean, Roland Barthes, and Kant does this too in the Critique of Judgment, right? And I don't know how it's translated in Russian, but liking is the kind of, that's not aesthetics, right? That's sort of beneath aesthetics. But I think this problem of affective engagement in the raises itself in a new way in the 20th century, and that Warhol is reacting. Obligation in what sense? Like an ethical obligation, or
yeah, ethical obligation.
I don't think so. I think it would be the precondition for an ethical obligation, but it's not sufficient. But it's a reorientation of the way that we would think about ethical obligation, because usually we think about ethical obligations, at least in the U.S., ethical obligations in terms of individual subjects whose differences must somehow be respected, or the other, right? The self and the other. These sort of, here's this other person that somehow we can't do violence to them, or their rights need to be respected, and I sort of feel like Warhol's approach in this sort of thinking about liking kind of displaces that whole orientation, and it's more about apprehending the already existing plurality of our being. Our sort of essential withness, as it were.
So it means that we are more engaged to the same, and we are
more engaged
to the same, to the singular, not to the different, not to the other. And it actually goes against all the Western tradition of acceptance of the other.
Yeah, I mean, it puts that, I'm saying that that's just a mistaken way to think about human being. That's just not how being actually operates. It's the self and the other is kind of not really the relevant ontology. I mean, again, what are, I'm just being Heideggerian, but, the human being is necessarily sort of plural. It's necessarily with adjacent, so, but anyway, yeah, that's another point.
But it's line of thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Я хотел бы еще задать вопрос, просто попросить вас немного прояснить вот это различение между desire и liking применительно к коллекции. То есть вы говорили, что Warhol все это собирает, то есть коллекционирование. Собирает вещи. Просто мне казалось, не знаю, может быть, я путаю, но казалось, что даже, по-моему, у Бодрияра это было, что как раз вот эти вот коллекционирования, оно и построено на дизайн, потому что невозможно удовлетворить до конца свою потребность, вообще коллекцию заполнить до конца. То есть как вот...
No, I mean, I'm arguing against this I'm not arguing against the Baudelairean conception so much as I'm saying that what Warhol's doing doesn't correspond to the Baudelairean.
Мне кажется, Лена говорит про Бодрияра.
Baudrillard.
Yeah,
Baudrillard. Yeah.
You said Baudelaire.
Oh, I said Baudelaire. Yes. Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, Baudrillard. Yeah, that's what I mean. For Baudrillard, it's like about, it's sort of platonic or something. It's like the, you know, it's about sort of bringing everything together. I mean, he's thinking more about the ontology of the collection as a thing, that the sort of the idea of bringing the collection together. For Warhol, I think the collection is not. It's not like he looks at, it's not like he goes home and is like looks at all the things that he has in his collection, right? I mean, they're, I mean, he puts these papers into these boxes and then just never looks at them again, right? In other words, the collection is a device for altering perception on a daily basis, right? So every object you encounter, you think of as this spoon could be part of a collection of spoons, or the sound this makes is being recorded onto this tape, and it's gonna be in my collection of tapes. So, and the conversation that we're having now is gonna be on this collection of tapes, is gonna be part of this. And so he's interested in the way that thinking about things in terms of their similarity to a group of other things changes the way that you relate to the object world, and essentially enables one to like it. This is quite different from, I mean, this principle of desire, in which this spoon is a lay spoon, it's not my spoon, and so I don't have it, but I want it, right, for myself, right? That's different from thinking about it. It's not about possession in the sense of this is mine. It's about thinking about it as entering into this sphere of similarity. So it's essentially it's a device, which in some ways I think underlines Pop in general.
Context too.
I could say more about desire, but...
Нет, вот как раз...
Давайте.
У меня несколько, наверное. С одной стороны, хотелось бы тут сказать касательно дизайна, даже касательно коллекции, вспомнить про Лакана. А с другой стороны, вот ваше рассуждение про коллекционирование, про уникальные коллекции, сразу вспоминаются работы нашего современного художественника Демьена Херста, который тоже очень много работает над коллекциями. Его большая часть произведений — коллекции бабочек, коллекции пилюль, коллекции инструментов. Но, в принципе, ну тут и сразу так не скажешь, но такое впечатление, что, казалось бы, коллекционирование, казалось бы, тоже там и единичное есть, и множественное, но совершенно другой принцип существования его работ. Ну, это просто визуальная ассоциация.
Смотрите, в чем принцип Херста? Это современный принцип, когда миллионер уже есть, а коллекции еще нет. Ему сразу надо иметь коллекцию. Поэтому Херст подает сразу коллекцию.
Чистый капитализм. Все объясняет. Ну не во всех работах.
Да просто.
Ну конечно, для Ворхола коллекция сама. Это было не его искусство. То, что он не как бы сделал коллекцию, чтобы продать или чтобы существовать как искусство, но как бы это скорее всего его как бы прием, чтобы.
Прием организации в целом, понятно.
Ну мне кажется, вот тут
уже. Прием организации восприятия
и коллективности.
Да.
Это очень интересный момент, потому что вот то, о чем там ложка, которая попадает в капсулу времени, она является следом коллективности, которую она несет.
Да.
Она не индивидуальный продукт автора, его желаний даже, а это как бы общественное отношение, которое функционирует, что-то в производстве выраженное. Это вообще как другой совершенно принцип.
Да, да. И хинопробы его, это как бы, то есть, да, каждый человек, который был в фабрике, то есть, как бы, factory, он как бы предлагал им, то есть, ну, давайте сделаем хинопробы. И это как бы, это попытка с людьми, как бы, переводить их в сферу подробностей. Это дело как бы коллективностью, как бы образ коллективности.
Не знаю. Просто у Херста этого нет.
Нет, этого нет.
Да, вот этого момента нет. Джонатан, мне волнует этот вопрос. Вот ты исследуешь творчество Бонакова, много знаешь. Я, конечно, видел это, его дневник, его то, что он не любит.
Да, конечно.
Это очень важно. Надо найти именно, раз у тебя концепция
лайкнесс,
значит, должен, надо обязательно его смотреть, где он проявляет. И как он с этим борется. Как ты меня учил. Любишь ли ты программу «Дом-2»? Спрашивал ты меня. Я не могу. Недостаточно,
да. Ну да, хороший вопрос.
Ну,
милиция. Нет, ну я, конечно, много не убил. Но это как бы. Это уже его как бы задача. То есть это момент как бы compensatory. Я не знаю, как. Лена, как compensatory.
Компенсаторы. Ну что, есть какие-то вопросы? Вот Антон молчит, хотел услышать про Ворхола. Может быть, вы хотели
какой-то другой взгляд обозначить на проблему.
Очень интересно идет разговор все время, вот этот вот likeness, там liking и прочее, вот это все. И почему-то никто ни разу не употребил там, хоть в русском, хоть в английском, хоть в каком-то эквиваленте там этот самый Einfühlung там, в чувствовании, эмпатия, там, как угодно.
А никто не
как и не произнес, хотя, по-моему, это имеет прямое отношение.
Это другой вопрос.
Ну вот. Тогда поясните мне вот это.
Объясни, почему другое.
Почему другое?
Да, ну,
объясни.
Об этом уже говорили отчасти, потому что...
Даже я сейчас понимаю, что я имею в виду, да? Вопрос прорыва барьера, кстати, привет Джиму Мэрсону, вот. И вот это вот breaking through, да? Он же ведь подразумевает то самое... То есть ты позволяешь себе проникнуть в предмет, и хочешь, ну, как бы вот... Ну, какого-то совместного движения, да, на встречу, да, или хотя бы ты впускаешься в этот предмет, да, то есть это как-то по-любому соотносится с темой вчувствования, то есть ты либо, то есть это либо понятие противоположное, ну, то есть оно все равно как-то соотносится, я бы хотел понять это
соотношение. Не проблема чувствования, то, что вот у Риголя...
Эмпатия.
Не сказать только у Рипли, сколько у Тимоти Лири там,
ну и
Turn On, Turn In, Drop Out.
Как будто в другом секторе.
Как бы Рипли, а вы прям. Ну Рипли это просто такая совсем классика.
Ну классика, да. Ну там,
посвежее, если правильно.
Ну короче, Oracle и наркотики тема.
Yeah, empathy, I feel like empathy is something something else. I'm inclined to say that empathy sort of presumes two individual subjects, and the problem is to somehow overcome their difference so that you can feel together with this other person, right? It sort of presumes that you don't feel with to begin with. Right, that you have separate spheres of feeling, and it's a big project to somehow join these spheres of feeling. I'm not saying that Warhol is correct, but I'm saying that for Warhol, he has a whole different view of how affectivity works, which is to say that we already share feeling. And the project is not to somehow overcome our differences to share the feeling, but to somehow remove the barriers to the common feeling that we already have.
Но, с другой стороны, какой-то кар-крэш или электрический стул, он подразумевает чувствование, подразумевает эмпатию. Просто у тебя нет предмета самого, да, то есть электрический стул пуст. И ты не знаешь тех людей, которые погибли во время кар-крэша. Вот. Но, тем не менее, все равно, то есть, ну, понимаешь, что я имею в виду.
А да. Где вот в этой триаде, о которой говорит Джонатан, интерес, interest, attraction, affirmation, где там чувствовать в одном из этих терминов? Они как раз вот очень хорошо показывают, что здесь как бы другая стратегия совершенно.
Тогда почему как хорошо?
The task with the car crash, right, is to remove it from the sphere of shocking you, and instead allow. It's a strange kind of feeling, right? It means, which in a way maybe is also not appropriate or expected, right? You see these dead people, you should feel grief, you should feel some overwhelming feeling or something, right? I mean, it should be some strong feeling. I think Warhol is trying to put that aside and instead somehow get us to... because it's impossible to have that kind of feeling with all of the images of death that we see on a daily basis. There's so many... Just the news, the most... Every night you see so many... It's just bad news, right? Suffering is everywhere.
task is to somehow not allow ourselves to be overwhelmed and shocked by that, but to have a sort of more accepting, sort of open, quiet, as it were, acceptance of the fact of these, the plurality of these deaths.
Если бы только на вчувствование рассчитывали бы этим краш, то тогда достаточно было бы одной картинки. Одна картинка, там может быть что-то, а как раз вот это массовое производство предполагает, что
чувствительность... Типа статистика.
Ну, если угодно, можно так сказать.
Ну, вы знаете, мне кажется, ответ на вопрос Антона содержится в какой-то степени в книге Сонтек «Regarding the pain of others». Вот ее интересует вопрос... Когда и почему мы перестаем
чувствовать
боль других? Да. То есть это немножко другой, другой ход, и там другая проблема обсуждается. Нет, ну хотя она связана с этими катастрофами, но это не Уорхол. Ее тоже волнует, вот как, при каких условиях изображение может вызывать у нас эти чувства. Ну и дальше она приходит к очень интересным выводам, ну, в частности, я не помню, там весь уже всю линию аргументации, что, например, вот такая фотография абсолютно постановочная, как фотография Джеффа Уолла, разговор мертвых солдат, или мертвые солдаты говорят, по-разному переводится, Dead Troops Talk, который является, ну, совершенно нереалистичной. Она может нам сказать больше, вот как, собственно, и у Уорхола, как она пишет, мы ничего не знаем про это, имея в виду страдания, войну и так далее. Но она может сказать нам больше об этом через нашу неспособность, ну, как бы, вот по-настоящему чувствоваться, я бы сказала, через то, что мы не можем, через нашу нехватку, она нам об этом больше сообщит.
Но фактически Антон же даже в самом вопросе то же самое говорит, что вот Ригель уже не устраивает, а надо там Джим Моррисон, Тимоти Лири, те, которые фактически изменяют саму ситуацию вот этого чувствования, она должна быть радикально быть нереалистичной, чтобы мы испытали чувства.
Ну, да, и тогда бы, то есть, ну, если продолжать эту всю мысль, да, то пометуя о том, что все-таки, ну, там, Анже Вархола,
вы куда ходите?
Нет,
Русин.
Русин, будь он хоть трижды Русин, просто, если он Русин, то он по-любому христианин. Или, по крайней мере, где-то в этой христианской среде он должен был с ней сталкиваться
постоянно.
Ну, не-не-не, ну, оставим покойно, задай вопрос, он не очень принципиален. Если он поляк, то он в любом случае очень, ну, католицизм для него, вот, какой-то...
Ну да, он был
религиозный
человек.
И просто православный, и просто иногда православный. Ну, вот, ну, оставим покой, насколько гомосексуализм может быть православным, там, и так далее, вот.
Мы знаем, что это легко.
Мы знаем, что это просто невозможно, вот, ну, неважно. Сейчас просто нет предмет. Но тогда электрический стул, да, ну, давайте посмотрим правду в глаза, это новое звучание престола Тавана. Ну да. Вот. Такой нет, да? Я не знаю, сколько наши уважаемые коллеги
поняли,
что престол Тавана
электрический стул.
Это престол, ну как это, престол, ну это...
А, престол, вы меня спрашиваете, я как-то...
Как сейчас перевести на английский престол?
Ну как трон, как трон, да, ну, как трон. Такое, трон, да, трон, да, престол, да. Да.
Не знаю, ну, в одном смысле...
Орудие страстей.
Хорошо.
Instrument of passion.
Ну, in Christian tradition, there is a the instruments of
passion. Ну, что-то там есть, может быть. То есть функции этой картины, это более похоже на memento mori. Memento mori. То есть это не шокирует, это просто как бы напоминает нам, что...
Быстротечность. Жизнь. Ну что, Еще какие-то комментарии, вопросы? Мы уже давно сидим, и я предлагаю, если, может быть, мы исчерпали какой-то первый вопрос, спросить. Но если мы исчерпали какой-то первый запал, то мы можем на этом завершить официальную часть и продолжить уже приятный разговор за чашкой чая. Джон, спасибо большое.
Спасибо.
Я считаю, что много было реакций. Это вызывает желание думать, возвращаться к тому, что ты сказал, и, может быть, даже не сразу высказывать какие-то свои суждения, потому что это требует действительно времени на осмысление. Спасибо.
Я тоже хотела поблагодарить, потому что я услышала другую совершенно логику говорения об Энди Уорхоле. Совершенно не так, как принято у большинства людей, которые комментируют, и у нас его творчество. И очень интересно все было, действительно нужно немножко подумать.
Да, спасибо.
Спасибо.